Hello, this is Nick Lane, and in a role reversal I shall be interviewing Paul Davison. This will be a change from the usual routine and could be a bit of fun. It was time to put Paul on the spot.
And welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is episode number 9 for May 2008. So this is a few days late. I've had a pretty busy time lately. As you'll have heard in the intro, doing something a bit weird this month. The second part of the interview with Dave and Sue Burnham I've pushed back till June. So sorry if you've been waiting for that. Got another month to wait, I'm afraid. A few weeks ago I had Nick Lane over for a couple of days and we had a good time just generally talking and going out for curries and all that kind of stuff. And for a while now he'd been at me about setting up an interview, a reverse interview, which we did. And I was actually going to run that in June 2008, but we've had a bit of a discussion on the Stormcock email list lately about off-topic subjects and all that kind of stuff, and it just seemed really, really appropriate to run this interview in May, for reasons which may or may not become a bit more obvious later on when you hear it. So in this episode, we have some news, an interview with Paul Davison, the A to Z of Harper, this time it's the letter I, and there's a lot to choose from with I, as I'll talk about a bit later on. So what I've done is the music selections throughout this episode all begin with I. It was just an experiment, really. I had a look through my collection of tracks and found that a lot of really nice ones begin with I. So I thought, well, we'll have an I-themed podcast, why not? Some listener feedback as well, of course. So first of all, some news. Something really interesting cropped up. Somebody found on eBay that a guy called Ian Tilbury was selling original handwritten lyric sheets of Roy's from a few years ago, and we did a bit of looking into it, and it turns out that Ian Tilbury was at one point one of Roy's managers, which in of itself is not that interesting. But by the process of looking up Ian Tilbury, Arrow Koskinen, hi Arrow, found a blog by a guy that we think is Mark Thompson, who is credited as the executive producer and Work of Heart project director on the album of the same name. And we found a blog. He talks about all sorts of stuff, but there are actually four entries there that are particularly to do with Roy. And they are absolutely compelling. They're all about how he got involved with Roy in the first place, starting off by doing an equipment hire for Roy when Roy still lived in England. And got more and more embroiled in the whole producing of the record and so on, and was around when Roy was busy trying to summon up some money from some of his mates. Words cannot do justice on a podcast of how much fun it is to read it, but I'm going to put the links to the four Harper-specific entries on the show notes. Suggest you go and have a look at those. Other news, Nick Harper is doing lots more gigging throughout the rest of the year, including various more Mountain charity related items, and again I'll put a link to his tour schedule in the show notes. Open your mind. Here I come, running stalkers through your brain. I remain Roy Harper. So the first track for this month is I'll See You Again, and this is from Roy's 1974 album Valentine.
No good pretending, girl, you were for spending the rest of your days round my neck. Well, I'm not that strong, and my time isn't long, and my love isn't something to wreck. I wish we could share that you'll never be there to be, having those kids with one man. Milk his frustration and get his submission, weep and wear black. Well, I'll see you again by accident, or maybe I'll see you again. I'm feeling the reasons for why I went, like mountains between now and then. I wanted to help, but I couldn't stay. And I flew, what else could I do? I needed to stop you from falling in love that way. I didn't have it for all. Stony with dreams cold and bony, I know how it feels, I've been there. I was your only fault, you're so lonely, faced with a permanent stare. All I was wanting was friends. Want my soul behind bars. Well, love isn't jealous or bitchy and careless. She's here for us all, she's all. So I'll see you again by accident, or maybe I'll see you again. I'm feeling the reasons for why I went, like mountains between now and then. I wanted to help, but I couldn't stay. And I flew, what else? To stop you from falling in love that way, I didn't have it for you. No way, no way, no way. No.
I'll see you again from the Valentine album. Now, next up is my interview. Nick interviewed me, and I was kind of loath to do this kind of thing because it feels remarkably self-indulgent to spout off at great length. But then again, if you're making a podcast, all you're doing is spouting off at great length, and it's up to the indulgence of your listener whether they care to continue. So if you've got this far, great, and if you're not interested by what I have to say or it offends you, just skip forward. Here we go.
So, speaking of putting you on the spot, Paul, perhaps you could tell us, who is Paul Davison?
Well, hello, Nick, and thank you very much for having me on the Roy Harper podcast. It's a real pleasure to be here. Who am I? Well, I am 42 years old, 43 in May, so I guess 43 by the time you hear this, pretty much. I am a self-employed IT consultant these days, but never mind. I live in Hertfordshire, with my wife, who I married about a year and a half ago now. And I have a son who is 12 now, who lives up in Kettering with his mum. And I am a Roy Harper fan, as you may well have gathered. A typical week for me involves, I work from home normally, so I'm sat at the computer at home doing various bits of work, but of course getting into trouble on the internet as well at the same time when I get bored with the programming or whatever. And that's how I can be vaguely omnipresent on the forums and so on and deal with problems as they come up. I do actually.
So you're an instant, you're an instant moderator then, are you?
Well, not instant, not always, but fairly responsive, one would like to think.
Right, well, thanks for that, Paul. Which begs a very big question from me, I think. What inspired you to set up the Stormcock links in the first place? And let's start with the original mailing list.
Well, this is actually quite a long story. So you can have a drink of that wine while I'm talking there, Nick.
It's the wrong time of the day for that.
Well, is it? Okay. It all started... Well, my interest in electronic communication started when I was employed at the University of London at Queen Mary College in the computer science department. I actually did my degree there, and I did a Master of Science up at Newcastle University. When I was at Newcastle University, my master's dissertation was in writing a graphical front end onto a text-based email program at the time. I got interested in user interface design, and I was very interested in email at that point also. In those days, the internet as we know it today didn't exist at all, and we used a thing called JANET, which some listeners will know about, the Joint Academic Network, which was a way of exchanging data over a protocol called X25. Email became one of the popular methods of using this bandwidth in the early days, along with something called Usenet, which was a distributed bulletin board mechanism. So I got interested in email. I then took up the job at Queen Mary because I, having finished my master's and having A, decided that I didn't have an idea for a PhD, and B, deciding that I needed some money, I decided to go and earn a living. And I went back to the university because I knew a lot of people there and it was a pretty cool environment to work in.
I remember once upon a time, Paul, and it's probably some years ago, I called you an anorak. And I don't think you forgave me for 12 months.
No.
Can you explain that, please? Why is that such a derogatory term?
Some people don't think it is. Some people don't think that geek is either. But it's a bit, you're not one of us, you don't go and play football on a Saturday, you must be a bit weird. And I still feel that way. But the anoraks or geeks of this world will inherit it, believe you me. So I was at my job in the computer science department, and I ended up being in charge of the email systems because I had a natural interest in that and poked my nose in. And in universities, you know, if you show any enthusiasm about something, you end up probably doing the job. And I got to chat to a few people on the Usenet bulletin board, soc.culture.celtic. And there was a guy, Colm Mulcahy. Hello, Colm, if you hear this. If you don't, I'm going to email you and tell you to listen to it. He was one of the people that I'd been droning on about Roy Harper to, and he said, well, why don't you set up a mailing list? And I thought about it, and I looked at how mailing lists were set up in those days using the software that I was using called MMDF, and that stands for Multiple Memo Distribution Facility, for those of you that care. So I set up this mailing list.
Not an awful lot.
And we had like 10 or 15 people in the first few weeks. And it was just basically a way of chatting about the music and finding out what other stuff people liked. And it was really good. It was only people that were at universities because they were the only people that had access to this kind of network. But kindred spirits or what, you know, it started off in that way and it was fantastic. And things followed on from there. When I eventually left the university, I took the mailing list with me and set it up at my new company there, which was a commercial company. It was a software house. And the mailing list continued. And then, of course, the internet started to arrive and people started to get home internet accounts, were connecting to it through a dial-up modem, and the general public got involved and the web appeared. So I set up some fledgling Roy Harper web pages and had links to the mailing list on those web pages so that people could look at type Roy Harper into a search engine.
How many people did you know at that time? Personally, no. I mean, there were Roy Harper fans, or was this all a voyage of discovery?
This was all a voyage of discovery. I mean, I'd got to meet people like the Burnhams when I was still working at the university, because Sue was working at Sussex University, and that's how we made that connection. But the link to your plebs, your Joe Public, your non-anoraks, hadn't really come in.
All right, all right. You still haven't forgiven me, I can tell.
Hadn't really come in at that point, you see. So at that stage, it was still academic people. When we set up the mailing list at what was then Steam Radio Limited, we started getting a more diverse readership, shall we say. And the mailing list, which, as I said, started off at like 10 or 15, gradually ramped up. And during those sort of peak years for the email list, I think we had 250, 300 people on there. And as I talked about in the interview with Darren Crisp, over that time, the hors d'oeuvres magazine, which had previously been the sort of main way that people communicated through the letters page and so on, that gradually started to dwindle, and the internet side of it started to take off. I ran, the email list for many years. Well, it's still going, but it was the primary discussion media for about 15 years, because I think I started it in 1989 or possibly 1990, and I set up Stormcock 2.0, which I'll talk about in a minute, in 2007. So you can see that was quite a long period.
Because it was very active, a bit cyclic, but there were years when it was very active indeed.
Mm.
Awful lot of traffic going through it.
Yeah, and you also have to remember that in those days there was a lot more gigging going on Roy's front, and Nick was just emerging as the major star that I believe he is. And so that kind of thing tends to attract more people, and there's a buzz. At the moment, things are a bit quiet from the Roy point of view, and I think that's being reflected in the amount of participation that we're getting from Roy fans. But anyway, had that mailing list going. I ended up leaving that job. I started my own consultancy, kept the mailing list going, changed the address it was coming from. And then last year, I thought, well, I actually, this is a bit of a sensitive subject for me, because I was getting a bit peed off with the mailing list, because the signal to noise ratio had worsened dramatically. There was a lot of rubbish being talked about, and I wanted to get things back on topic a bit and talk more about the music and more about the lyrics, more about the sentiments, more about the morality and ethical issues of Roy's songs and all of that kind of stuff. And I started to feel actually that I wasn't in the right place to do that. So I decided to set up a second channel for communication, and that's why I set up the stormcock.net website. And the reason I did that is because on a mailing list, it's a free-for-all, and basically you just send an email to an address and then it gets replicated back to everybody that subscribes, and it's immediate. And there's no moderation, there's no way of controlling it, it's complete anarchy, and that's great. But it can also get out of control.
I think there were occasions when you did have to act as a moderator.
Well,
it got a little bit out of hand here and there.
I think hand moderation was the term that certain people took exception to. I can't imagine why. But
something to do with being buried in a dark cellar somewhere.
Something like that. So I set up the website, which gives me a lot more tools to kind of thread conversations, and people can witter on about all sorts of crap, but they can do it in their own blog, so they can have their own little diary section. And if they want to talk about how many poos their dog's had this week, they're more than welcome to do so. But the point is, the person that's navigating that website can then choose whether or not they want to read it based upon previous experiences is with this person with the pooing dog. Whereas with the mailing list, you get all the emails and you have to sift through them to find the stuff you're interested in, which presumably isn't poo, and then throw away the poo.
Hmm.
I was,
There is an aspect of that that you don't know what you don't know. So sometimes you've got to go ferreting about to find out what information is actually there. Whereas the mailing list is immediate. It's in your face whether you want it or not.
There are benefits. There are pros and cons to both methods, and that's why I've kept both of them going.
Hmm.
And there's still a large contingent still on the email side of things. You know, a couple of hundred people at least. I haven't done a count in the last few weeks, but it's 200, 250. And there are a lot of people looking at the website. In fact, there are a lot more people looking at the website than there are participating in the website, because you can read all the stuff there without having an account. You need an account if you want to post something or use the chat room or look at the or write stuff on the forum and so on. But what I've found over the years is that there's an awful lot of people interested in Roy and Nick's stuff. They just want to read the news. They want to find out when what gigs are coming. They want to know if there's another album. They don't want to get that involved. And so I think a website is better aimed at what I suppose you could call the casual fan. That sounds a bit disparaging. Just somebody who hasn't got the time to sort of obsess about it and immerse themselves in it as much as perhaps you or I have.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a degree of truth in what you say. You work from home, and so do I, principally.
Yeah.
So you do have the luxury of being able to have a quick peer at the mailing list or whatever else it is and find out what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people don't have that luxury.
No, that's right. That's right. It's quite a privilege, really. Although I think it's becoming more common these days with like mobile internet devices and whatnot. I mean, if people can spend 2 hours a day on Facebook or whatever the ridiculous statistic was recently, then, you know.
How much of a burden is it to you to keep the mailing list, for example, going? I mean, you've got two systems running, which is fine for, you know, for all of us, but rather preempting one or two other questions here, but what would make you pull the plug on either one or the whole thing, for that matter? You're providing a wonderful service to all of us Harper fans, Paul. You've got a moral obligation now. What sort of circumstances would make you pull the plug?
It's an interesting question, because once you've been the cement to bring a community together, there is a certain moral obligation to continue facilitating it. And I can particularly refer Nick fans back to the recent collapse of Nick's own forums at harperspace.co.uk, and the person that was running those on a voluntary basis got several large bills from his ISP due to heavy traffic and basically cut them off. Now, he didn't do it in a very good way. He should have given notice and he should have announced what was happening and made a migration path. But he just basically decided to throw the towel in and cut it off then and there.
Mm.
Now, most of those people ended up on my forums, which is fine. I'm more than happy to do that. But that's an example of cutting a community off with no notice at all. And yes, there's an obligation not to do that kind of thing, I believe. A moral obligation, really. I like doing what I do, but you asked what the overhead of the mailing list thing is. That's actually very minimal now, because it's running like a well-oiled machine, as they say.
Due to your expertise.
Well, not necessarily, no. The software to do mailing lists has become very mature over the last few years. And when I first started with my MMDF stuff, it was, you know, pretty primitive, and I was hacking at C code to make it work. But now, not so much. I run the mailing lists and the stormcot.net website and the hosting for the podcast off of a machine that I rent in a managed facility. It sits in Docklands in the Redbus exchange.
Hmm.
I pay £1,000 a year for that machine, and it allows me, I think, a terabyte of internet transfer per month on a very fast line. But I also use that machine for my business website, all of my business email, and I also have a couple of other domains hanging off of that machine that for friends who pay me a small amount towards the yearly upkeep. So I would say that in monetary terms, I am spending probably £700 maybe a year on this little hobby. And that actually is quite a lot of money. So one thing that would make me stop might be if my financial circumstances changed and I had to really, really rein this stuff in and not renew that service when it came up for renewal. But there's a very easy answer to that. All I do is find a way of hosting the old email list for free or for almost free, and I would have no problem doing that. Yeah. The fancy stuff like the podcast would take a back seat until I'd sorted out an alternative. In terms of what would make me give up, though, we've had flame wars in the past, and mentioning no names, we have had, and we currently have, pillocks. I don't include you in this, Nick.
Well, thank you.
And
I've had my moments.
I have had weeks where I've, at the end of the week, on the Friday night, with my glass of wine in front of the telly, I've thought, I have spent literally 5 hours this week on a prat who basically doesn't really understand how to talk to other people and is making a real nuisance of himself. And I occasionally have had to ban people from the website or throw them off the mailing list. And I absolutely hate doing that. And that is the only thing that would make me stop. If I had to do that every day, I'd probably just say, bugger that, I've had enough.
Yeah, but I understand what you're saying. But that sort of thing almost polices itself, doesn't it? If you've got someone who's perhaps being a bit of a nuisance, everybody else ignores that person.
To an extent, yes. But when they start defacing the website with crap, I have to remove it. Otherwise, new visitors to it will take one look and say, what the hell is this?
Is going on here?
You know, and I can't have that.
Yeah.
I'm too much of a control freak to let that happen.
Yeah. Don't think that for a moment.
Yeah, well.
The only other thing that crossed my mind, and forgive me for saying it, but StormcockNet is a superb development. And I wondered if it could almost finance itself. Is it not surely a marketable package for you to sell? And are you using this almost in some, well, no disrespect intended, but it's a development project for you as much as anything else, is it?
What I would say, yeah, I actually...
And we're fortunate to take advantage of that.
I initially set it up as an experiment because I've written it using the open source content management system called Drupal. And I was looking around for new ways of writing websites and providing what is now standard functionality with account logins and forums and, you know, collaborative authoring and all that kind of stuff. And I'd seen Drupal recommended by a few people, so I started playing around with it just on my home machine. And I thought, actually, this is pretty good stuff. So I threw together a Roy Harper site and played with it for a couple of weeks, and I actually let a couple of friends play with it as well, just as a sort of closed test, if you like. And I thought, actually, this is pretty good stuff. This could form the basis of a new incarnation. But it's also technologies that I'm interested in because I work in IT, and I can program lots of languages, and I know about lots of operating systems and all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm quite general, but I'm quite interested in the communication side of things. Mm. So I hacked this.
I can only give you a round of applause, Paul, for the technology behind all of this. I won't use the word I've used before about you. But get back on the plot just a little bit, if we could.
Yeah.
What is your favourite Harper music?
Right. Well,
I mean, you've talked about building up an email function or a mailing function and so on and so forth to bring Roy Harper fans together. But what's Mr. Davison's, you know, favourite Harper music? And I say Harper not in a disrespectful term. I'm talking about Roy and Nick.
Yeah. The first Roy Harper album I heard, I believe, was Work of Heart. I think the second one was Unknown Soldier, and that was better than the first one. And I think the third one was Flat Baroque, and that was better than the second one. And I think the fourth one was Flashes from the Archives of Oblivion, which was equally as good as Flat Baroque, but in a different kind of way.
You're talking about the chronological order.
I'm talking about the order
when you bought them.
But I'm using that to explain to you the albums I like and the albums I don't like. As I started to listen to more of Roy's stuff, I started going backwards in time and found more of the acoustic stuff and more of what I would term the classic albums. When I first heard Stormcock, that was the pinnacle for me, because the four tracks on there, I have said before and I still believe, are perfect. It's the perfect album. I can't think of a better album, and I can't think of an artist that expresses these themes and the ideas in those four tracks in a better way. So for me, that's where Roy hits the spot. And I believe that...
You must have been astonished when you first heard it then, if you'd heard other albums from Roy.
Yeah, completely.
And you suddenly came across that one.
Well, I'd heard the live Me and My Woman on Flashes, of course, but the studio one with the proper band and everything, it's just glorious, you know. I think that I like Roy on acoustic guitar, and I think I like long, complicated songs, but that comes down to my liking for complicated music, dare I say progressive music, given that the first album I bought as a kid was Mike Oldfield's Tube Lapels. You can see where I'm coming from, really. Punk didn't really make much of an impact on me, although I quite like it now.
How many copies of Tubular Bells did you buy before you got a decent pressing?
I've still got the first one, actually. Yeah. I was quite lucky there. Roy's music, well, I can't generalise. In one sense, I'm saying I don't like the stuff with a band, but on the other hand, HQ is a miraculously good album. Work of Heart isn't. So maybe it's to do with the way it's arranged and the way, you know, the songs are structured. I don't know. I mean, I like the Work of Heart songs that he redid on Born in Captivity, and I like the stripped-down aspect to that. I think perhaps the best way of saying what I like about both Roy and Nick's music is when I experience it live, that's when it buries itself down into my brain and my heart, and I really... no pun intended, resonate with it. And studio recordings sometimes are able to inspire that same feeling, but often they fall a bit short. And that's why I've been to so many gigs. Everyone's different and everyone strikes a real resonance. I've said elsewhere that I don't think Nick has managed to quite project the Nick Harper experience on studio album as opposed to live. Double Life is Nick as I think of him, and those live tracks are fantastic. So I think it's Roy's stuff that doesn't go over the top with studio trickery and allows the basic emotion of the songs to project itself. Does that actually answer the question, Nick? I'm not quite sure.
Quite a few answers in the original question, I think. Very interesting. You've mentioned a lot of Roy's music, touched on Nick Harper's music. Is there no studio work from Nick that you actually like?
Oh, I like it all, don't get me wrong. There are degrees of like, aren't there? Miracles for Beginners, the last one, I thought was very good. But my favourite Nick studio one is probably Seed. And I think that's just because of the songs. But it might also be circumstantial, because when that album came out, he was starting to do a lot of gigs, and I was a wastrel working at the university and had a lot of spare time and spent a lot of time seeing him live. I mean, I can't remember whether that was quite the same time as the every Thursday night at the 12 Bar Club with me staggering home on the night bus at 3 a.m. after Nick had played for 5 hours doing all sorts of covers and... Oh, I must tell you this, in fact. there was one night when it was towards the end of a sort of multi-week residency he'd had there, and the staff of the 12 Bar decided that he'd done so well, and obviously the bar takings had been so good. They came in the room. It's a very small room, if any of you have been there. It's tiny. Came in the room with this tray full of different types of schnapps in these little shot glasses. And they had intended for this to be shared around the audience as a thank you, basically. But of course, they brought it up to Nick first. So Nick took one, drank it, put it on the tray, took one, drank it, put it on the tray, took one, drank it, put it on the tray. And he drank the whole tray, then looked around, and then... carried on playing.
I thought you were going to say he just fell over. Yeah.
He carried on playing, admittedly a little bit sloppier than before, for another, I don't know, half an hour, I'm not really sure. The gig finished and we all went home. And it later transpired that he had a bit of a night of it. And one of his friends who had drunk considerably that night as well ended up waking up in the morning with half a bottle of tomato ketchup by his bed. Apparently he'd still been thirsty and had decided that drinking tomato ketchup was the way forward. I'm telling you all this just to give you a sort of idea of the insanity of those gigs. And that might be why I like Seed the most, because it reminds me of those days. Mm. So that may be, a lot of people say the power of music is associative, and you think of what you were doing at that time and it brings back memories. That's possibly true. And that might be why I like Seed the most. And that may be why a lot of other people think Blood Songs is fantastic, because that may be the time they got into Nick.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I didn't buy Nick's CDs from early on in Nick's, you know, career, if you like. I bought them in retrospect and hugely enjoyed all of them. But I don't have I just didn't latch on to Nick earlier on.
Well, that's like you with Roy. You've listened to most of Roy's stuff as it came out. But for me, I only discovered him in the early 80s. Mm. So for me, I had that whole back catalogue to catch up on. And for you, you had the same thing with Nick. It's quite interesting, really.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that, Paul. I just wondered, because the leader of a band of Harper fans, for want of a better expression, do you have much contact with Roy on a personal basis? Do you get any feedback from what you're up to?
I'll answer that in a sec. Let me just go back to the previous question, because there's something I didn't say, which is why I actually like the music in the first place. I've told you the tracks I like, but it occurs to me that I haven't explained why I've been so captivated by it that I've chosen to do lots of work doing all this stuff. Not everybody appreciates music. My wife is not a music lover as such. She likes stuff she can dance to, but it doesn't sort of hit her on the sort of deep level.
Never tried dancing to Roy Harper's music.
Oh yeah. I don't think now's the time, Nick. Maybe after the interview.
I'll leave you alone.
When I started listening to Roy's stuff, I realised that finally there was somebody who seemed to think the same way that I did about life, the universe and everything. Thank you, Douglas Adams. And he was conducting his musical life in a completely non-compromising manner. And I had a lot of sympathy with that. My life, of course, is not anywhere near as public or as artistically involved as Roy's is, but I live my life by my own set of private rules, if you like, and I treat people in the way that I believe people should be treated, and if they choose to treat me the same way back, then great. I will then, you know, spend more time with them. If they don't and they're complete pillocks, then I don't tend to talk to them again. But I have my own way of conducting my life, and I think I don't have much tolerance for people that I don't think are doing things in the right way. That sounds very sort of old git stubborn, but that's how I've always felt. And with Roy, I felt that he also had decided his life would work in a certain way, and he'd set out his stall, if you like, at the very start of his career. And he hadn't wavered from it, and he was addressing all these issues. And I really felt finally somebody's saying all these things, and it's not just me that's been thinking them. And that was an epiphany, really.
Interesting.
Yeah. Sorry, yes. What was the question you asked that I didn't answer?
I can't remember now. It was something to do, well, broadly speaking, it was, do you get much feedback from Roy
or
Nick for that matter, you know, because you being the leader of a band of merry people.
Well, Nick first. When I went to see Nick play at Cambridge in March, I came up to him afterwards for a quick chat, and he turned around and said, you know, I just want to say thanks for all the stuff you do on the web front and everything. And I said, you know, I just do it because I like doing it and I want to do it. And he said, yes, I know that, but I feel it's important that somebody should tell you this. So I said, oh, well, you know, thanks, mate.
Gosh.
Nick is somebody that is very easy to talk to. He's the same age as me, I think. And, you know, we've always got on very well. And he is somebody you would just go for a pint in the pub with and not think twice about it. Roy, on the other hand, because I hadn't kind of grown up with Roy performing and everything over my life, and I discovered him later on, and he had already reached fairly legendary status at that point with all the, you know, the acknowledgements from Led Zepp and the collaborations with Pink Floyd and everything else. The first time I met him was at the Virgin Megastore when In Between Every Line came out.
Where else?
And they had a promotional event.
Oh, okay.
And one of the
You weren't just both browsing the shelves.
Yeah, hello, Roy. Oh, hello. They had one of the front windows, one of the display windows, they'd ripped everything out and they'd installed a TV in there showing the cricket and a chair. And Roy was sat in that chair watching telly in full view of everybody on Oxford Street. So it was a kind of, those of you that have got In Between Every Line will know that there's a picture on the front with Roy watching telly, and they were kind of recreating that picture. And I walked past, I knew this signing event was going on, so I'd skived off from university to go and get my album signed, and I saw him in the window, and I thought, bloody hell, what's he doing there? This is a bit weird. So anyway, I went in, and there was actually a queue of people, and there was a little mini stage set up. And we all bought our copies of In Between Every Line. And I seem to remember at that point, I also bought Folk Joke Opus, which had just been reissued on vinyl by Andy Ware at Awareness Records. In fact, I got a mispressing. It had McGoohan's Blues on both sides, which is quite good. And Roy played the game. And my memory's hazy, but I've got a feeling Nick was actually playing licks on it as well, the same way as you get on In Between Every Line. It's him and Nick playing it. And then, of course, we did a signing thing. And, you know, my turn came. I was at the front of the queue. And Roy was with Jackie at that time. And I can remember clear as day. She took a photo of me while I was talking to Roy. And I don't know why, and I've never seen the photo. But he looked at me, and he looked at Joe Copus, and he said, "Ah, yeah, I like that one. Jackie plays that a lot in the car." And I said, Juggler's really good, you know. And he said, "Oh, yeah, that was good as well." And then he signed the rest of them and put two Paul on them, and I trotted off. And that was my first encounter of meeting somebody who, to my mind, had godlike status. And as I talked about in the interview with Darren Crisp, there comes a point when you realise that people are people. And as time went by with Half Moon Gigs and so on, Jackie would always say hello to me when I when I turned up and got my first pint and all that, and she knew that I was doing this email stuff. And eventually, obviously, Roy got to hear about it, and then occasionally we'd have a chat at the end of gigs, and you know, the ice got broken. And over the years we've talked more and we've emailed, and I've been out for dinner with him in Ireland and all that kind of stuff. And I'd say we're probably quite good friends now. And it's a privilege to know somebody at that level whose time is limited, because not every Roy Harper fan can establish a kind of personal relationship with him, I suppose. And I didn't do any of this stuff so that I could get to know these people. It's just happened because I do this stuff, of course, but it's a privilege. And so, in answer to the question, yes, they know what's going on, and Tracy listens to the podcast, and I know that Roy's listened to some of them, although I should imagine he can't bear to listen to it all, because, I mean, how weird must it be listening to
loads of people
an internet program about you? I mean, I it's a bit freaky, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I know they appreciate what I do, even though I occasionally make disparaging comments about stuff. And, you know, long may it continue, because the reason I do this, apart from getting to meet like-minded, rational people like yourself, is I want to get more people aware of Roy and Nick's work for a very selfish reason, which is I want more of it. I want those albums that haven't yet been produced, written, recorded, whatever. And I want that to be done. And if I can get that done by bringing more people towards the shop and buying the albums, then I'm doing
it. Yes, I think we're all waiting, aren't we?
We are.
For new albums from both of them at the moment.
Well, yeah. I mean, Nick's definitely on track because he played the new 38.
Yeah, everybody's been mentioning this track and I haven't heard it yet, unfortunately.
Rory's currently digging up his back garden. So I believe. Maybe we'll get a gardening concept album next. I don't know. That'd be good, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, you never know. I mean, it has been commented that he's become a bit more, you know, rustic and rural in nature since he moved to Ireland. So maybe we can have, you know, the farming album.
Perhaps he's exploring the wilder shores of eccentricity.
I think that's been happening for quite a few years, actually.
Well, thanks very much, Paul. It's been an interesting ramble. Long may you continue supporting us all, is what I would say. I'll give you a round of applause for all this, the support for StormcockNet and so on and so forth. When I asked you earlier what would make you pull the plug, it was a very serious question.
Yeah.
A lot of us have, we do depend upon you so that we can all keep in touch with each other. It's a very valuable service.
Well, thanks.
It is a community.
It also gives me a very warm feeling to know that I've helped do that, you know.
Hmm.
It's a good thing to have done.
Is there anybody that can take over?
Yeah, of course. Hey? Nobody is indispensable.
No trainees.
Are you offering?
No, I'm not an anorak.
Stop making those obscene hand gestures at me, Nick.
Be quiet. You'll give people the wrong idea.
Well.
But anyway, once again, thanks ever so much, Paul.
Okay.
Very interesting.
Thanks, Nick, and thanks a lot for having me on the programme. Bye now.
Bye, Paul.
The next piece of music is In the Morning from the Today Is Yesterday album. It's an album of very old recordings that never made it onto an album. Lots of very early Roy, and this is a track you might not have heard.
Well, the lights are going down and the town's gonna sleep in. And the vast has calmed its sea and those who sow the night are reaping. Caterpillar escalators have all sunk into cocoons. And I'm roaming round the whisper. Of a thousand haunted moons. And I'm thinking of my loved one in the pallid song of starlight. Well, you got her from the horrors of the blood-swept human fight. Will you hold a frightened hand through the long and darkest hours? Will you tell her of the leaves in spring? Will you show her to the flowers? My wandering face is tightened as the darkness creeps and lingers. And the waterfall of dawn has come a-seeping through my fingers. I hear a gentle voice, I think her heart to me is calling. I'll tell her that my love has grown. I'll tell her in the morning.
In the Morning there from the Today Is Yesterday album. The A to Z of Harper next, and as I explained in the intro, I picked the letter is I for this time round. what could I possibly pick other than I Hate the White Man? This is a signature track for Roy, and it was probably the first real vitriolic protest track that I heard of his when I got a copy of Flat Baroque and Berserk. And its impact on the first listening has not lessened over the years. It's an incredible song. It's a cry against lots of silly behaviours, ridiculous bigotry, and basic wrong thinking. And I think this is maybe one of the songs that has caused Roy to be so unpopular with some of the mainstream for so many years, because he doesn't hold back. He says what he thinks, and he doesn't really care whether you like it or not. It needs to be said, it needs to be heard. And incredible song. I think for a few years he may have got fed up with singing it live and got fed up with people billowing, braying for it, calling out for it during gigs. And yes, it does tend to attract a bit of a sort of bit of a reaction like that. But then it's a very powerful song. What I've decided to do is play the live version from the Les Cousins album. Here we go.
Far across the ocean, in the land of look and see, there once was a time for you and me, where the winds blow freely and the easy seas flow still, and where the barefoot dream of life can laugh and cry its fill, where slot machine confusion and the plastic universe are objects of amusement in the fiction of their curse, and where the crazy white man and his tear gas happiness lie dead and long since buried by his own fantastic mess. For I hate the white man and his plastic excuse. Oh, I hate the white man and the man who turned him loose. And the rains of colored thunder of the stallion of the dawn ride the coal fire morning on the beach where all is born, where the emperor of meaning is burning up his paper fort and sits to warm his toes around a fire made up of useless thoughts, paper thoughts. And when the children tempt him with the riddles of their trance, he flings the flames of solstice, casting laughs into their dance. And where the crazy white man in the desert of his bones lies as bleached as the paradise he likes to think he owns. For I hate the white man and his plastic excuse. Oh, I hate the white man the man who turned him loose. And far across the reaches of the drifting yellow sands, the living carpet wilderness forever joins its hands with a heaven's hell's attainment in a surging crest of fire, where more than all is thrown upon the everlasting pyre. And through the countless canticles of Jason's now charcoal fleece are sung the songs of nothing in the timeless masterpiece. And there stood in the middle, guess who? Is the everlasting bust built by God's very own white man as he tries to rule the dust. And I hate the white man in his doctrinaire refuse. Oh, I hate the white man and the man who turned him loose. And the bowels of his city have been locked conveniently into a convenient safe, where the spew stains on the sidewalks are defenders of his faith. While back inside his kitchen, the bowler-hatted, long-haired saint cleans with soap and water, but it's really just white paint. While his gorgon-headed scandal sheet presents its daily bite to give the righteous news believers drugs to keep them white. While outside in the whitewash, where the guns are always, always, always right, the shooting star has summoned Death's dark angel from his night. And I hate the white man in his evergreen excuse. Oh, I hate the white man and the man who turned him loose, and the man who turned you all loose.
That was I Hate the White Man from disc 2 of the Live at Les Cousins album. Now on to listener feedback, and first of all, a voicemail.
Hi Paul, Graham here. I'm also known as Fuzzy on the forum. I've just listened to Harpercast number 7, and having heard your plea for audio feedback again, I've downloaded Audacity on my PC and recorded this here bit of fluff for you, which hopefully won't take up too much space on your next podcast. My feedback is actually about episode number 6. Not that there was anything wrong with episode number 7, in fact I really enjoyed it a lot, it was excellent. But I'm still irked by by what Elle Rose said about the Green Man album, when plainly what she should be saving all her wrath up for is the first two tracks on the Dream Society, namely the Songs of Love and Songs of Love Part 2. Now, I'm happy to listen to Roy pissing on his bloody shoes or singing about Turkish wrestlers, jock straps and such like, but I absolutely suffer and struggle with Songs of Love all because of that woman's voice. I just can't take it. Just can't take it. I was married to a classically trained singer who loved Joan Sutherland, Liz Blackhead and Dame Kiri Tin Opener, or whatever she's called, and made me even go to some of her gigs, all of which has unfortunately scarred me for life with a complete and utter aversion to the classically trained solo singer. And sadly, that woman on Dream Society, I just can't do it. So anyway, all the best with the podcast, and I shall shut up now and go away. Bye.
Thanks very much, Graham. I really enjoyed that voicemail, and if that inspires any of the rest of you to submit voicemails, you can either ring the number that I'll give later on in the programme, or you can just send me an MP3 or WAV file, as Graham did, and I think it sounded great. Yeah, well done, and I like what you said about the poor woman who sings on the first two tracks of the Dream Society. I like it, so there you go. Okay, some other feedback this time, textual, so I'll read some of it out. And first of all, stuff for episode 7. I heard from a guy called Webby Lar, or Chris Webb, and he's been in touch a couple of times. And he said, I was just listening to the latest podcast, great as usual. It's years since I've listened to any RH seriously. My interest arose again due to a change in job, which allowed me to listen to my iPod while working. I quickly started downloading podcasts and pick up on yours. I also got around to ordering Roy's book, which has made interesting reading and indeed viewing. It's really nice to listen to stuff like the Darren Crisp interview and then be hit with some music I'd completely forgotten about, which brings me to something that struck me while listening to Goodbye. Roy was obviously in precognitive mode when he wrote that song. He managed to reference two songs from Juggler in the one line, and you're the same old hangman who rationalises hope. Okay. Thanks a lot for that. And yeah, it's really nice to hear that people have, you know, picked up on the podcast and reawakened some of their interest in Roy's music, because that is indeed, you know, one of the whole points of doing it. In general, other feedback from podcast 7, Pete Herring was very pleased that I played Bank of the Dead, because he likes that track very much, and says, are you reading my mind? That would be telling, wouldn't it? Okay, Steve T says, was anybody else struck by similarities in some of Darren's vocal mannerisms and intonation with those of Roy's? Interesting point, actually, and I think you're right, definitely. Sue Burnham was very pleased to hear, as she describes them, Darren's dulcet tones again, and she agrees that he does have a similar vocal manner to Roy's. She really liked hearing about the birth of science fiction stuff, early Nick stuff, and was amused to hear that he'd been working with Uri Geller, and wants to see the footage of Roy at the Albert Hall, as do we all indeed. She also speaks up in defence of Work of Heart, one of her and Dave's favourite Roy albums, circumstantially, I think, again. Andy Watterson says, very good quality, even on crappy earphones, Sound Library, he says, turning the page. I don't see the problem with having McGoohan's Blues on a pod or even the whole of Stormcock. Thanks, Andy. I don't know that I should do that, really, because then people won't go and buy the album. You know, I don't know, we'll see. Okay, and on the forums, thanks to Traveller Man, who says that he looks forward to it and it's a highlight of his month. Thanks a lot, I really like that. Interviewing Darren was fantastic stuff, and I felt like fascinating stuff, and I felt like a lot of rumours or questions I've thought about for years were covered very well by his forthright and open manner. One of the things about Roy is he used to tell a few stories and save others for another day, or hint at things that were never discussed again. Yes, he does tend to dangle these carrots in front of people. Pete Herring says, Darren has a dignified and respectful approach to people, a true gent, I'd say. Some gems in there in terms of Roy's stories. Looking forward to some future involvement by Darren. Actually, I haven't heard from Darren for a few weeks. I'll have to email off to him and see what he's up to. In terms of feedback for podcast number 8, Sean said, really enjoyed the 8th podcast, Paul, and some great stuff from Dave and Sue Burnham. I've spent many hours reading Nick and Roy reviews on Dave's website. They are compulsive reading for Harper fans. I've forgotten how good that version of Hangman was too, now I've converted entirely to CD format. There was a lot of comments about the origami and a lot of excitement, as you may have realised. It was an April Fool. I think one or two people got caught out, but I was, you know, in very infantile mode. I enjoyed it immensely, so there you go. For those of you that haven't looked at stormcock.net, Dave Burnham posted a mock-up of Roy and Nick on stage at the Bloomsbury Theatre, as I mentioned in the podcast, but also had a very hirsute and handsome gentleman lying in front in a tie-dye T-shirt who bears a slight resemblance to how I used to look about 20 years ago. Really made me laugh. Thank you very much for doing that, Dave. That was extremely funny. Dr. Doom the Optimist says, the origami thing was inspired and interesting tales galore from the Burnhams. Great. That old radio appearance went a little awry, a bit of overindulgence on something by the sounds of it. And I like the quote from Roy's school report, has been seen in the vicinity of the school recently. Yeah, that interview was terrific, wasn't it? I'd love to find more like that, but I think that's the sort of most far out one that I've come across. I do have a few more sort of on the back burner for when we don't have interviews that I can throw in, but yeah, very good. Andy Watterson liked the version of Hallucinating Light, which he hadn't heard before. Jolly good, that's the whole object of it. Bob Jacobs said, brilliant Paul, you took me in hook, line and sinker with the origami. It was only when I got home at the end of a long hard day that I realised I loved Roy and Nick larking about on Southern Counties Radio. More of the same, please. Well done, Dave and Sue too. Okay, great. Also, I did put a song at the beginning of the podcast by Porvari just as a teaser for the Splinters project that we had a CD for sale, which is now no longer for sale. But anyway, and the general impression I got from people was as long as it had a link with Harper, then yeah, why not throw in the odd bit of music here and there, but not go overboard with it. So that's probably what I'll do. Every now and then, maybe I'll throw something in when it's got some particular relevance to it, you know. Okay, Pete Herring. Pete has commented that he obviously listens to the podcast on the website. I have a little player widget on the stormcock.net site and you can press play and listen to the podcast right there and then. But the problem with that is when you navigate to another web page, of course it stops the player. There is a download audio file link also on that page. And that downloads an MP3 file which will save to your local hard disk and then you can play it within the media player of your choice, and that is by far the better way to do it. That way you can have it playing in the background and get on with other stuff. That's if you don't already use iTunes or a similar podcatcher, in which case you can use the podcast feed, which I also have linked to on each podcast, and that way whenever I publish a new episode you get it automatically and it will appear on your computer or on the iPod or audio device of your choosing. Stupidly, I thought this was all completely obvious, but I do realise, as Nick Lane would say, that I am a bit of an anorak and therefore assume everybody else is. So, maybe that's cleared that up a little bit. Pete also says, some belated feedback on Darren Crisp's interviews. He is a man of the people, a very empathic soul. Empathetic, he says, actually. And very music fan compassionate, if you get my meaning. He understands from a music enthusiast's viewpoint why we do what we do. A very refreshing and indifferent individual in the biz, I think. Yeah, I like that. Thanks a lot, Pete. I think that was an excellent comment to make. Pete Cunliffe said, excellent stuff again. The origami update in particular made me smile. Wonder how long after that interview Mr. Boyd kept his job for. Yeah, good point. Okay, anything else? Traveller Man said, the Tommy Boyd interview was hilarious. Thanks for making that available. This stuff needs to be preserved and disseminated. Harper Archive, perhaps. That's an interesting thought, isn't it? Yeah. I'll have to think about that a bit more. Okay, I think that's it for feedback. So, on to the next thing. Once again, following the I theme, the next track is If, from Roy's album Once.
If it was right, if it was wrong, if it was easy, some. If it was right to be believing and write his name in blood. And then I met him when I died, well, I'd have it out with God. But if it means degrading seas and sanctioning crusades, I'd know we couldn't stand man to man without feeling afraid, feeling afraid. If it was wrong for not believing in fairy tale facade. And then I met him when I died, while I'd apologize to God. But if it meant I went down on my knees, well, where's the spirit gone? Where's the love you're all talking of when you can't stand man to man? Man to man, man to man, when you can't stand man to man. I find it hard to believe in these gospels that I've heard. The forked tongue of the Bible Belt, the Ayatollah's word. I don't believe most anything spoken by anyone, as hell's fanatic paranoid spy, heaven's loaded gun, loaded gun. If it was right to be believing, then it must be in this. The difference is beautiful, and living it is bliss. There are no teams, there is no side that life on earth is done. By living the love you're only talking of, by standing man to man, man to man, man to man, by standing man to man, man to man, man to man. Where's the love you're always talking of when you can't stand man to man, man to man?
That was If from the Once album. I really like that track. It's a kind of considered way of saying, look, there may be a God, but if there is, do you really think that they would ask you to fight wars on their behalf or kneel down to them or somehow treat them as some supreme being and not as an equal? Okay, we're very nearly at the end of the podcast now, so the credits as usual. This podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK, England and Wales license. That means you can share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it or charge for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited. It is not for copying or redistribution. And the intro music is by kind permission of Adam Leonard. All the other incidental music I've used in the podcast is from the GarageBand library and is free for use. Okay. Voicemail. Please do send voicemails, as you may have heard from Graham's one. It really does. It's nice to hear things in people's own words. If you want to do it by phone, 01223 850 282, +44 1 223 850 282, or you can email me an MP3 or WAV file or any audio format you care to use, pd@stormcock.net, and I'll be happy to play it on the next podcast. If you do care to send a donation our way, there's a PayPal button on stormcock.net, but that's completely voluntary. If you've got some spare cash hanging around, it will help with the running costs. We've had a lot of reviews on iTunes, more the merrier though, so if you do use iTunes as your method of getting hold of this podcast and you've got some spare time, please give us a review. That'd be great. Okay, so next month we will have the delayed part two of Dave and Sue Burnham's interview. Hope you're looking forward to that as much as I am. And I'm going to finish off this podcast with I Want to Be in Love from Roy's album The Dream Society. See you next month.
At the rising of the dove, when the dark betrayal fades, I'll wake up in love where my heart is laid again. morning of the day, when you bring your things to stay, heaven will pay, there'll be no more pain again. I wanna be in love, I wanna be in love, I want to be in love. I wanna be in love, I wanna be in love, I want to be in love with you. In love with you. All I need is to be loved by the woman I adore, like she never loved, like I never loved before. And I realize it's done, that a dream is coming true, that there's someone new in my heart, through and through. I wanna be in love, I wanna be in love, I want to be in love. I wanna be in love, I wanna be in love, I want to be in love with you. In love with you. I saw it all begin in a moment of pure sin. It was in your eyes, we were lovers in Berlin. I wanna be in love, I wanna be in love, I want to be. I wanna be in love, I wanna be in love, I want to be in love with you. In love with you. In love.
songs of love. Blog entries on the show nuts, but show nuts.